So we were in which, what was the theme number? 19 is over, okay. One devotee had asked a question about the Satiprata. See, for us, Satiprata may appear extremely shocking. How can, is it not like some kind of suicide? Actually, the husband and wife are one unit. They are not considered separate. So, they are also spiritual partners in their progressive journey back to Godhead. If husband goes to heaven, wife also goes to heaven with him. If husband goes to spiritual world, wife also goes to spiritual world. And the culture, when it was at its zenith, the relationship between them was so thick, Prabhupada says, that the fire certainly causes pain when you enter into fire, but the pain of separation was more greater than that also. That's how they could enter the fire. Like the Prabhupada explains about how such kind of prata was there. Also, it is voluntary. You hear in examples from Mahabharata and Puranas also, a woman who don't enter fire also. If a woman does not enter fire, she remains after the husband's demise. She may completely enter into a spiritual culture of a life of dedication and renunciation and asceticism. When she becomes like an ascetic, then she practices her spiritual life in that way. That is also considered as she is civilly dead. There are definitely examples. Anybody can give some examples of a woman who did not enter Satiprata but continuously. One example was Kunti, who lived for the sake of responsibility towards the children. Correct, no? So the reasoning is given there. Any other example comes to your mind? He's saying example of Uttara, who was pregnant, and although her husband had died in the battlefield, our Abhimanyu. So she was to beget the last child. And then after Parikshit was born, you don't hear about Uttara entering fire or anything. You don't hear. Because the son is taking care of the mother after he grows up. Yeah? He's saying Satyavati. After the passing of her husband, still there is information about her continuing to live. Correct, no? So we can quote evidences like this. Yeah. Also, if a woman does not enter fire, it is not considered that she has less love for the husband or something. Nowhere it's quoted like that. She may enter into a spiritual culture and keep herself. The purpose of the Vedas talking about the Satiprata is, a woman, after the passing of the husband, should not decorate herself attractively to allure the minds of other men in the society and degrade the character of good men. That's one thing. Also, she should not become exploited by unscrupulous men in society just because she is a widow and she is not under the care of anyone. So, then she can be abused and polluted by other men, resulting in Varna Sankara. Or she may be a loose woman who may pollute the character of pious men. That possibility is also there. And also, when a woman survives after the death of her husband, she has to actually live by the codes of conduct given in the Shastra. Shastra say actually that her lifestyle should be such that she doesn't unnecessarily become a thorn in the society. Rather, if she is a sadhvi, she is religious and pious and spiritual minded, she is focused on her devotional activities but with a very simple attire. That is also, I have to find out which purport Prabhupada talks about it. That the women who become sadhvis, they live a life where it is like they are civilly dead. Just like brahmacharis. Brahmacharis wear this dress, saffron dress. So the saffron dress is compared to fire. We have entered fire already. Which means our body is no more meant for sense gratification. So, like imagine if a girl sees the brahmachari with this dress, she should understand, this fellow is gone case now. Even if he is handsome, very healthy, well-to-do, everything. So he is unfit for married life. Actually, in general, the saffron is given for those who are heading towards full renunciation of sannyas. But sometimes a brahmachari may turn back. Ranaswami Maharaj in those days used to tell us in the early days when we were taking saffron. He used to say that taking saffron means commitment to Guru, that I will not marry, but I will dedicate my life to the mission of Srila Prabhupada. That is the meaning of taking saffron. And taking danda means taking a vow in front of the deities that I will not marry and I will give my body, mind, words, tridanda, you know, to the service of that Krishna and Srila Prabhupada, that kind of vow actually. So this is also like fire, only entering into fire. We don't use our body for any other purpose other than Krishna service. So if a woman can live like that, it is as good as entering fire. So let us proceed to the next one. Yeah, this is 41. This is read the translation, 41.
O gentle one, I simply lament for he, Dhritarashtra, who rebelled against his brother after death. By him, I was driven out of my own house, although I am his sincere well-wisher, because he accepted the line of action adopted by his own sons.
Yeah. See, sometimes, in certain situations, we also talk about the bad character of somebody else. So can a devotee of high integrity like Vidura talk ill of somebody like Dhritarashtra, you know, whose misbehavior is being quoted here while talking to someone else? So that is only possible in case the relationship of Vidura Uddhava is extremely intimate. Such things may not be spoken anywhere and any place in a public place. Here only two of them are there, Uddhava and Vidura are there. And also, Vidura is not speaking out of any kind of vengeful attitude towards Dhritarashtra or anything. And what is the proof for that? He went back to home, enlightened Dhritarashtra and delivered him. Therefore, it's clear that he is not speaking out of vengeance for Dhritarashtra, but he is only lamenting the pitiable state of Dhritarashtra. And then he is saying that, what is the meaning of he rebelled against his brother Pandu? That means after Pandu passed away, instead of raising the fatherless children nicely and posting them as the king of the world, instead of doing that, through gambling match, he cheated them and drove them to forest. And then he wanted to promote his own son. It's called nepotism, we call it. So he did such a thing. And then he is saying, although I am his sincere well-wisher, because he accepted the line of action adopted by his own sons. That means he became corrupt because of attachment to Duryodhana. That's what he is saying. So he is saying that, I lament for him, which means I actually, Vidura here is playing the role of a paradukkha dukki. He is feeling sad by seeing the pitiable state of Dhritarashtra. He is not actually feeling any kind of, and that is cleared by Prabhupada if you read the purport. Now, Vidura did not ask about the welfare of his elder brother, because there was no chance of his well-being. Only the news of his gliding down to hell, because he knew as long as he was attached to Duryodhana. And then Prabhupada says, in spite of driving out Vidura out of his home and everything, Vidura never became an enemy of Dhritarashtra, but continued to be his well-wisher. And at the last stage, he delivered him. Such is the behavior of a Vaishnava like Vidura. He desires all good, even for his enemies. So one lesson we learn here, that when you are a Vaishnava, although we talk the exalted position of a Vaishnava as very forgiving and he is a well-wisher of everybody and everything, after all, Vaishnava is also a human being. He has his emotions. Therefore, when Duryodhana spoke very sharp words, that time, was Vidura hurt or not? He was hurt. It says as if an arrow was piercing the ears. Karna Banair, it is said. So his ears were pierced by the insulting words. Momentarily he must have become stunned and shocked. by the unexpected behavior of Duryodhana. Young boy, you know, who is like a nephew for him, and he is behaving, speaking so harshly like this, it pierced his heart. Certainly, emotionally, he must have been affected for a moment. But being a devotee of the Lord, immediately Lord gave him Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Lord gave him the Buddhi. Take it as an advantage and go for a pilgrimage. Like that, he got instruction. And he went for a pilgrimage. And now, some amount of that incident will remain in the mind. So he's remembering it. But most amazing thing is, while remembering that incident, in his heart there is no revenge for Duryodhana. There is no revenge for Dhritarashtra. Rather, he continues to be his well-wisher. After even being striked, or even after being slapped, he continues to be well-wisher, feeling pity for Dhritarashtra. So that is the point we have written here, designing good even for one's enemy. When Lord Narasimha asked Prahlad, you know, can I give you some benedictions? Prahlad didn't ask anything for himself. But he said, you know, my dear Lord, if you can deliver my father, you know, it will be nice. Actually, Prahlad didn't pray for Hiranyakashipu, there was no question of deliverance for him. You know, but he prayed for the deliverance. So, that is also a point similar to this, desiring good for enemy. And you will see this is actually a Vaishnava attitude. Of one, if somebody, due to ignorance, they misbehave with the Vaishnava only feels pity. Why he feels pity? This is what the Shastra say, that he feels that person is doing out of ignorance. Just like Jesus told about one of those two fellows who were put on the cross. Oh Lord, please forgive this fellow, for he knows not what he is speaking. He is in ignorance. So, how can we tolerate somebody's inimical behavior towards us? Shastra says, this is the way we have to see people. We have to see that this person is now currently conducted under the three gunas. Rajoguna, Tamoguna especially. Therefore, his behavior is erratic. Or it may appear like animalistic. Like animal is striking you. Like that somebody is striking you. So, you can defend yourself, protect yourself, but you don't have to hate the person. Why we want hate? Because he's acting out of ignorance. His act is foolish. And he is feeling inimical towards me and he is dealing like this. So we feel sorry for him. Like somebody asked me, you know, if you get to meet Ambedkar, what you will do? Some people asked. So then I told them, I have studied about Ambedkar's childhood. When he was in his school days, he was traveling in a horse carriage, you know. So the horse carriage driver he turned to the boy and asked him about his whereabouts and home and class and everything. So the boy casually told that I am born in such and such untouchable family and everything. As soon as he heard it, he stopped the horse cart. He removed the horse and took the front and did like this, and the boy rolled from the cart and fell on the ground, you know. And he toppled on the ground and fell. And then the horse driver said, you rascal, you never told me you belong to this untouchable caste. And my cart has become polluted, contaminated by you. And he immediately put some water, sprinkled water and purified the cart. And he gave a slap to this boy and he went away. So when this boy got up, you know, he looked at that horse cart going. And he thought, when I grow up big, you know, I will eradicate this untouchability completely. And then as he grew up into an intelligent boy, you know, he understood that, you know, this Brahminical class of people are very proud and they have kept the society under control. They have become leaders of the society. And what is the tool they are using? Manusamhita, which has a lot of laws, higher caste, lower caste and everything. So when he grew up into an educated man, he said we should burn the Manusamhita in the public place. He started a revolution and he said we don't believe in the Vedas. So in this way he rejected the Vedas and he started a movement of many followers saving in the name of saving the untouchables from the higher caste people. And he demanded rights for them, human rights and everything for the untouchables. And then he became a hero amongst them. Correct, no? So the boy asked me, if you meet him today, what you will say? I said, I will feel sorry for him. I will tell him, sir, you are sadly mistaken. You know, we don't believe a Brahmana son is a Brahmana. A doctor son is not a doctor. A lawyer son is not a lawyer. A doctor son has to become a qualified doctor. So then I will tell him that in ISKCON we don't have any untouchability. Everybody is allowed into our temple. Mlecha, Chandala, Yavana, everybody can chant holy name. Achandale, it says not that shloka. Achandale then Nithai. Nithai that what is that song? Kodanithai, it says. Even Chandals are allowed. So I will give him the good news. All your Dalits are welcome into our temple. You can chant and dance. So when I said this answer, there was a big round of applause amongst those Nishtha camp boys. One of them asked this question. Now, why they clapped hands? See, when a universal principle is spoken out, it really touches the heart. Correct, no? Actually, we have no enmity with Ambedkarji. Because Ambedkar was ignorant and he was innocent and he was mistreated. When you understand this total picture, you can't feel, you know, envy for him. You can understand that it's all unfortunate. Unfortunate turn of events. So when we feel pity for somebody who's ignorant, then the revenge can be given up. It's possible. So Buddha also in his teachings, in one time he said, don't see the worldly people as envious, see them as ignorant, he said. When you see them as envious, you will feel revengeful attitude. When you see them as ignorant, you will feel pity for them, he says. So here also he feels pity for Dhritarashtra. So not just feeling pity, he want to do some active service to him. Therefore he goes to meet him, you know, and deliver his brother. And another thing we should know that he has a very thick relationship with Dhritarashtra. So he has the right to speak like this. Because he has done so much for him. Correct, no? So many years he has invested in him and still this fellow didn't change. And he is telling another intimate friend like Uddhava about the family. And he is venting out his painful feelings that he didn't take my good advice, although I am his sincere well-wisher. But he went on remaining attached to his son. And then this is the result. Like that he is saying. Go to 42. Soham harer martya vidambanena drishonrinam chalayato vidhatuhu nanyopalakshya padavim prasadat charami pashyan gata vismayotra. Translation.
I am not astonished at this. Having travelled over the world without being seen by others, the activities of the personality of Godhead, which are like those of a man in this mortal world, are bewildering to others. But I know of his greatness by his grace, and thus I am happy in all respects.
Yeah. See what he is saying, I am not astonished at this, having travelled over the world without being seen by others. And then he's talking about the Supreme Lord. He knows his greatness by his grace. Which means, Tvadvirya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chittaha. Same principle. You know, the painful feelings in our heart or grievances which we carry, they can only be mitigated by hearing about the colorful, sweet pastimes of the Lord. There is one shloka comes to my mind. Hasam hare ravanatakila lokati vrashoka shrusagara vishoshana atyudaram. These two lines. He is saying, Hasam means laugh, a smile. Harer, Bhagavan, Harike, Has. Avanata Akila Loka Tivra Shoka Ashru Sagara is saying, the living entities have created a ocean of tears and due to their lamentations and difficulties. And that ocean is evaporated by seeing the smile of Lord Hari. So, that means a Hari smile must be, how powerful it is, you can imagine. Then one observes his smile, one can evaporate the ocean of grief, he says. Similarly, here also he says, by remembering the Lord, I have ever evaporated all my grievances. Like that he says. See, Prabhupada says here, third line, Prabhupada says, Dhritarashtra and his materialistic sons want to falsely lord over with their own strength, and they became more and more bewildered. And then below, three, four lines below, he says, he was not at all sorry to be bereft of his hearth and home, because he had now experienced that dependence on the mercy of the Lord is a greater freedom than so-called freedom at home. A person should not be in the renounced order of life unless he is firmly convinced of being protected by the Lord. So like this, this is a devotional response which Vidura gave. Actually, when generally people think that if I, you know, if I have my own house, you know, if I have my own car, if I have my own business, you know, if I have my relatives and friends living in the same home with me without everybody going here, there, everywhere, you know, and we live as a joint family with all the brothers and their wives and their children and mother, father, everybody in the same colony. Nowadays they do a new thing, did you observe? They take one colony with 6 or 8 houses. For one brother they give one house. So that it's Achintya Bheda Bheda type of, you know. You have your little independence also and your joint family also. Because in the early days, joint family means everybody would be in one big house. Now they make it little separate. They have one kitchen, yeah, common kitchen, like that. So people are trying like this. I mean, so sometimes such kind of home with all relatives, friends, own business, own money, own car, facility, that can give us a illusion of great shelter. It can give us a kind of sense of feeling of great protection, great safety, great shelter. There are so many people. If I get sick, 10 people will come running to ask me how I am, you know, if I have any problem. So then this material world appears to be a very wonderful place for such a person. That Prabhupada calls it as a so-called protection. See, the word so-called is using. So-called freedom at home, he's telling. Actually, the nature of the world is, it's created in such a way that when there is, the example is given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when a person is put on a stick upside down, with leg up and head down, and is drowned in water, half the body, like a thief they would do, and then he's suffocating in the water, and then when he's taken out, and then they will tell the truth. And if he says, no, I won't, again, under the water, again remove him, then he will release little truth. So like this the police would do, putting a man upside down in water and remove him. So Mahaprabhu says, our happiness in this world is like that relief of that man from the water. That's what we call as happiness. And then again we are submerged in suffering. So this kind of Sutamita Ramani Samaja, he says that the family with all the members and facilities and amenities and money and everything, it makes us, it gives us an artificial sense of security. Yeah. But actually you find even in such families, suddenly one man gets some big disease, he's admitted in hospital, he goes to ICU, and then whether he will live or die, nobody knows. What can everyone do? Therefore he uses the word so-called. See, Prabhupada uses the word so-called freedom at home. So, and then he's saying before that, he had now the experience that dependence on the mercy of the Lord is a greater freedom. Actually, depending on the mercy of the Lord is experienced by Vidura now, by now. Because he went to different place, he stayed in Dharmashala, in some place. He must have got food, different type of food, different places. Different place to stay. Sometimes there is no place to stay. He must have slept by the bank of a river or something like that. You know, he doesn't know anybody. When you don't know any people, you have no relative, you are in one sense lonely. But if you are a devotee of the Lord, when you don't know anybody, that time that loneliness becomes such a big advantage to take full shelter of Krishna. Therefore, in the 16.1-7, Prabhupada says, Abhayam means a sannyasi goes in the forest. He is not even afraid of the tiger and lion. He has full faith that the Lord in the heart of the tiger will inform the tiger that I am serving the Lord. He has no fear at all. Even in the forest. You know, Haridas Thakur was living in a cave along with a big snake. Mountain snake. He was chanting peacefully and the snake was living peacefully also, both. Only when Vaishnavas came, they were a little disturbed. While talking to him, they would keep watching the snake also, time to time. So then Haridas Thakur said, if you are all very disturbed, then I will leave tonight this place and I will go to another gufa. And when the snake heard it, he felt very sorry that I am creating disturbance for this saintly person. So the snake immediately slithered away from that place. So Prabhupada quotes that example for fearlessness. He says, so Vidura also, he became fearless also, and he experienced the sweet shelter of the Lord. You can ask our PDC devotees who experienced such a thing for 20 days. Correct, no? You don't know. Someday prasad would have been opulent. Correct, no? Other day it would have been very simple. Some days, Lakshminarayan Prabhu was telling me, when they stayed, one day they were staying in veranda of one place. But the veranda got full. There was no other place. Then some of them had to sleep under the cart. So Lakshminarayan Prabhu was sleeping under the cart. Suddenly in the night, he was feeling something chill touching. Then he saw heavy rains and water was flowing, and the water came and touched his body. Then he got up. So he was sleeping on the floor in the ground. And the water was flowing on both sides, he was telling. So how many of you feel it's a very adventurous life? Correct, na? Yeah. Because you don't know. And sometimes the prasada may be on time. Sometimes your travel distance may be a little more. Prasad becomes a little more late, you know. Then you have to cry to Krishna, I am hungry now. You know, you depend on him. Similarly, staying place, prasadam, facility, what comes next, we don't know. So, when I was traveling in America also, I had experience that sometimes you get better facility, sometimes less facility. You learn to adjust in all kinds of situations when you travel, traveling preaching. And Prabhupada tells about it in the Narada boy, when he was, when he became an itinerant preacher, wandering preacher, when he was going from place to place, when you go. So, many times our human nature is to make too many plans for eating, for sleeping, for making comforts. And we want life so perfect. Travel should be perfect, eating should be perfect, sleeping should be perfect, luxury should be perfect, everything should be perfect. And we have our own idea of how things should be. And we want to spend hours and hours to set right the things, to make comfort. So therefore here is telling the dependence on Lord's mercy and protection, which means things may not be perfect the way you want, but you accept the way they come to you. Instead of demanding the way you want, you accept in whatever way it comes. So therefore, Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj, he writes in that book, Brahmachari in Krishna Consciousness, no? He says that, you know, long hours, late nights, early mornings, extensive traveling, little prasad, sometimes great feast, and then he puts a hyphen and says, pure bliss. He says, you know, so what he calls it? Pure bliss, he says. Why? It's pure bliss because of dependence on Krishna. So what brings that sweetness is dependence on Krishna. Like one of the days in Hyderabad, when I was traveling, actually these fellows, Radha Pramod Prabhu had told me that, you know, we can finish 6 Bhagavatam distribution in one day. And from morning we started, and by the time we went, because the distance was 70 kilometers distance from one point to another. So in between we stopped in many places. So the last house I'm supposed to go, there was heavy traffic in the road. By the time I reached their house, it was 11:40 or so. Night 11:40. Night. That was the last program. That was the last. So I was thinking that all fellows must have been snoring and sleeping now. You know, I will just go to their house and just say Hare Krishna. Prove to them that I have come. You know. And all the sleeping fellows will come to know next day. Prabhuji aakar gaye. You know. That was my idea. But when I reached the house, before the entrance, I heard loud kirtan. Jordar kirtan was going on. And the lights were on. There were 5 brothers, you know, and along with their wives, sons, daughters, big family, you know, they all were living. So when I entered the house and everybody was wide awake and all flower decorations, everything they had done. So then I went to their house, 11:40, I was wondering. And they were all thinking that we can have a program. What is the problem? They were thinking. For them, late nights were no wonder. You know, because many of them are not yet devotees. Only some of them are devotees in that. See, after you become devotee, only early sleep becomes important. Correct, no? Many of them still had the mustache, the beard and everything. Yeah. So they had no problem. They were very cool. Only I had problem. So that part. Then they all sat and then told me, here is the asana for you, please sit here. And all the Bhagavatams they had kept in the front. Now I understood that these fellows want a lecture now. So I thought I'll give a short lecture and finish it off. So 11:40 to 12:20 I ended. In a 40-minute lecture I gave. And after the 12:20, then I told them, so you all got your Bhagavatam, very nice. You know, I'll pray to the Lord that He blesses you. Okay, you can pray to us, but you have to write and give. We heard that you write and give. In every, so they broke open the boxes and took out the first volume and brought it. One by one, family came. So by the time I wrote and gave, it was 12:45 or something. 12:45, 12:50. Then I gave it all to them, all of them. And then they said, Prabhuji, would you like to have one more kirtan? They were asking me that. I said, you all can have wonderful kirtan. I am going to sleep now. So actually, it is not good for us to go low so late night every day. But sometimes occasional stretch, extending in Lord service, your body may be paining, but you feel great bliss. That's something very wonderful service you got an opportunity to do. When Isolna Chandramani Maharaj came to Pune, after 4 days of 4 to 5 programs a day we kept for him. Last day when I asked, Maharaj, how did you feel about the programs and everything? What was your stay in Pune? He said, I am blissfully frustrated. He said, Which means my body is frustrated and my soul is blissful, he said. So in this way, see, dependence on Lord's mercy and protection. So Prabhupada is saying below, 4 or 5 lines from the bottom, you see. The stage of dependence is called Sattva Samshuddhi, or purification of one's existence. The result of such purification is exhibited in fearlessness. A devotee of the Lord who is called Narayana Parayana is never afraid of anything. So Vidura travelled alone and he was not seen or recognized by any friend or foe. Thus he enjoyed freedom of life without obligation to many duties of the world. See, when you are alone like this, and you have no friend or foe in this world, there is no one for you to impress. Correct, no? See, when you belong to a certain group, then only you have to impress people. Correct, no? Otherwise, for him, whom will he impress? There's no need. Therefore, he got freedom of life. You understand, no? It's a life of freedom. He only has to please the Supreme Lord. So, many of the words are used here. Dependence on the Lord's mercy, protection of the Lord, fearlessness in all situations. Not having any friend or foe, no obligations or duties to the material world, he is freed from all of them, relieved, retired from them. So in this way, very life of great dependence. So enjoying the freedom of life versus obligation to duties of the world. See, Shastras talk about responsibility versus detachment. So when one is married, especially from the age of 25 to 50, they have responsibilities. They can't run away from it. But after 50, many parents will find that the children have grown up. They have grown up. Some of the children may be engineers or doctors or whatever. Then the parents should turn towards Krishna consciousness. Because from 50 onwards, it's a life of detachment. So 25 to 50, life of responsibility. Correct, no? So Bhagavad Gita talks about both. Similarly, Bhagavatam also. So, I will show you one verse, I will show you from the Bhagavatam. This is told by Swayambhu Manu, says, see here. Ati vishama vishaya visha jalashayashaya uparama, it is said. The meaning of this is what? See, this is the meaning. Swayambhu Manu, he achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires by giving up his position. Swayambhu Manu put Priyavrata on the throne and he got relieved, retired. Then he went to forest to perform his spiritual duties. So, Vishaya Vishama Jalashayasha, he says that he achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material disease, which means when you have responsibility, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, all that he has to do. Now he has relieved from it and he took to devotion service fully because his sons are managing the universe now. I mean, Priyavrat is managing. So he got relieved. Similarly, you will hear Narada Muni preaching to Prachina Parishad. And then Prachina Parishad gets, great inspiration to renounce everything. And then he tells his ministers, my sons Prachetas will come back. And then you make them the kings, but I am going now. Even before Prachetas returned, Prachina Parishad went to forest. That was the way Narada Muni preached, very powerfully. Similarly, Vidura preached to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra retires. So, when you are young, if somebody is getting newly married, if husband says, I am very inspired to renounce everything, then wife will faint hearing that. Because there is a time for everything. Correct, no? Therefore, in brahmachari life, in student life, one should stay under the custody of guru, study, learn, work hard, everything. When one is married, then one takes responsibility for the wife, children, family and everything. And then when one crosses 50, one is not attached to, still the material obligations. One starts focusing on spiritual life and gradually becoming detached from material world and attached to Krishna's lotus feet. Correct, no? So this is what Bhagavatam teaches, if you see. So, and Vidura is certainly old now. And he is a minister. He has been a minister several years. Now he is freed from the obligation to duties of the world. Namely to Dhritarashtra. See, the preaching he is doing for Dhritarashtra, that is not an obligation. That is voluntary. Correct, no? He is doing it out of his affection for him. Whereas when he was a minister, he was obliged to hear all the politics. He had to solve all the problems. Now he is relieved completely. So he's enjoying the freedom of life, you see. Okay, go to 43. Why does Lord wait long in punishing godless? So here it says in 43, Krishna refrained from killing the Kurus, although they committed all sorts of sins. Although he saw the other kings were agitating the earth by their strong military movements. Three kinds of false pride. He says three kinds means wealth, education and followers. These are three kinds of pride that arises from money, learning and followers. And then Prabhupada is asking a question in the fourth line in purport, you see, fourth or fifth. The question may be raised, why did the Lord tolerate injustices and insults in his presence? Why did he not chastise the Kurus immediately? When Draupadi was insulted, Lord protected Draupadi by supplying unlimited cloth. But he did not chastise the insulting party immediately. This silence of the Lord did not mean, however, that he excused the offenses of Kurus. There were many other kings on earth who had become proud due to three kinds of position, wealth, education, followers. And they were agitating the earth. And the Lord was just waiting to get them all together, the battle of Kurukshetra, and kill them all at one time, just to make a shortcut in his killing mission. Godless kings, they become puffed up by the advancement of material wealth, education and followers. They always make a show of military strength and give trouble to the innocent. When Lord Krishna was personally present, there were many such kings all over the world. He thus arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra. In the Vishwarupa, he showed how he devoured all those sinful kings. Next para, he says, the Lord always wants to see his devotee as the hero of some episode which he himself performs. He wanted to see his devotee and friend Arjuna as the hero of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And thus he waited for all the miscreants of the world to assemble. That and nothing else is the explanation of his waiting, he says. So, martya vidambanena, that word was used in the shloka. That means he is a producer, director, scriptwriter in a devotee's life. And a devotee has to just become an actor, that's all. Lord writes a script for them, he becomes a director for them. So, in this way you find have you heard this saying in English? The mill of God grinds slow but fine, that is said. The mill of God grinds very slow. Sometimes we may wonder how some sinful people are going on without any punishment. But the Lord does a very fine job. He has a reason why he spared Jarasandha every time, so that he can go and bring other demons. And he makes Krishna's job more easy. He collects demons and brings, and Krishna kills them all. Then Jarasandha runs away and brings one more batch. So many batches of demons, and Krishna was finishing them very easily. Otherwise, Krishna will have to chase after the demons and search for them. This fellow was doing the searching and bringing them all together. You see? And the Lord's plans cannot be understood immediately, why he does what he does. He has a... Like if he killed only Kauravas, you know, then other sinful people would be left out. So, he allowed Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra to make allies with all the sinful king, because birds of the same feather flock together. So people who made alliance with Kauravas, they were also like them only, like Shishupal, Dandavakra, Jarasandha. So they're all like, just like the mosquitoes breed in a gutter. Similarly, the sinful demons, they assemble together, and you will see in Bhagavatam, sometimes even Jarasandha and Shishupal, they also talk about Krishna. But their talk about Krishna is how to finish Krishna. You see? So Krishna assembled all of them together, and the great Mahabharata war was enacted by the Lord. So why does Lord wait long in punishing the godless? So some people ask this question, so many cows are being killed nowadays, why no action is taken by the Lord? And there are so many atrocious people, why don't they die on the spot for doing such things? So one thing is, we should know, we are not the controllers, or we are not the punishment awarders. We are only witness, we are just watching in this world. And Lord knows who should get trouble when. There are many politicians who flourish in their lives because, you know, they have some punya from the past. Correct, no? They go up, they're shining, shining, shining. One day the punya gets over. From there they fall down from that position. So we don't have to worry about who should be punished when, because the Lord's eyes are the witness. He's watching everyone. At the right time, Prabhupada says that he delayed it for this reason, to assemble all the demons together. That's what he says. Yeah. Like, you know, the tsunami came in Lanka. At that time, 3.8 lakh people died. And they were all buried under the ground, you know, by the ocean waves, which was rising practically sky high, and came. People thought Pralayakal has come. There it came. Now, many people said, so many innocent people died in the tsunami. Why God is cruel and everything? So I read one of the explanations, that when people don't let a child come out of the womb and kill the child by abortion. So nowadays such abortions are increasing in very big number. So if Durga Devi has to kill so many of them, she will be 24/7 busy, preoccupied to kill so many people. So what she does? She arranges one big tsunami wave. Finishes, you fellows didn't allow the child to see the daylight. Now you will be buried under the sand without seeing the daylight. And the tsunami came, and, you know, like we say, for every action there is a reaction. Yeah, you will see that. Similarly, people slaughtering the cows, therefore there are so many automobile accidents. So many people are driven over by vehicles or trains, or, you know, they die in accidents. And also people die in wars, in huge wars. Prabhupada says when wars happen, Durga Devi is laughing. Ha ha ha, she is laughing loudly. Her shrill laughter can be heard in the battlefield, because blood is flowing. Millions of people are killed by bombs and, you know, tanks and everything. Yeah. And why so much killing? Because these fellows are murderers in their previous lives and they have to be killed now. Consequence. So, and at appropriate time, the Lord will take action. Now, right now, the Kali is becoming ripe and ripe. Because the doctor sometimes waits for the boil to become more and more and more ripe. You know, some Ayurvedic doctors give medicine to make your boil bigger. You know, why he want to make it bigger? Yeah, he makes pus to develop more and more. He is removing all the toxins from the body and creating a big pus in one place. When it becomes very big, like that he will slice it. That's what Lord did. Yes, yes, come, demons, join Duryodhana. Here is the place. Keep joining. When everybody joined, when Duryodhana's army became very huge, Lord told Pandavas, finish them now. Now it is time for operation. You see? Therefore, Lord waits, he says. Okay, this is 45. This is a very beautiful verse. We'll recite it.
Tasya prapanna kila lokapanam avastitanam anushasane sve hartaya jatasya yadushvajasya vartam sake kirtaya tirtha kirtehe.
O my friend, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord who is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. He is unborn and yet he appears by his causeless mercy upon the surrendered rulers of all parts of the universe. Only for their interest did he appear in the family of his unalloyed devotees, the Yadus.
Yeah. See the second paragraph. You can read the purpose of pilgrimage. Read it.
The purpose of pilgrimage is to remember the Lord constantly, and therefore the Lord is known as Tirtha Kirti. The purpose of going to a place of pilgrimage is to get the chance to glorify the Lord. Even today, although times have changed, there are still pilgrimage sites in India. For example, in Mathura and Vrindavan, where we had a chance to stay, people are awake from early in the morning at 4 a.m. up until night time and are constantly engaged some way or other in chanting the holy glories of the Lord. The beauty of such a pilgrimage site is that automatically one remembers the holy glories of the Lord. His name,
name, form, quality, past names and all, which are identical to him. And then he says, anytime or anywhere, pure devotees meet and chant the glories, the Lord is present without doubt. So Prabhupada is saying, this is the purpose of pilgrimage. Elsewhere, Prabhupada writes, the purpose of pilgrimage is not to go for sightseeing. There is one purport which will come now in the third chapter, I think. There Prabhupada says, the purpose of, when there is opportunity for a devotee to go for a pilgrimage or to render service to the Lord, he will not go for a pilgrimage, Prabhupada says. He will render service. So he is more eager for service than to go round and round places to see the places. Another place Prabhupada says, Yattirtha Buddhi Salilena Karhichit Janeshu Abhigneshu Sayeva Gokaraha. If somebody is having a Tirtha Buddhi, that Tirtha Buddhi means going to places of pilgrimage only for sightseeing and not for hearing the glories of the Lord or pastimes of the Lord. Like sometimes a group of people say that we are going for Chardham Yatra, they say. Okay, who is leading you? They say, no, the buses are taking. Nowadays there are so many business. Traveling agents. So they are taking. So that type of Tirthyatra cannot be considered a good pilgrimage. Because there is nobody who is revealing the Dham to them. Nobody is selling them pastimes of the Lord. They just go and say, this is here, that is there. Like that of details they know. Geographical things they know. But they don't purify the heart. So even if any of us have a desire to go to Dham for visits, we have to check our motivation. Why I have attraction for Dham? Like if you ask somebody, why do you want to go to Mayapur or Vrindavan Dham? So one boy was saying, Prabhuji, nice change, Prabhuji, you know, change from the routine. Thoda change, acha. Bore lagta hai idhar. So for a change you can go. So some people want to go for a change. Some people like traveling is fun, going to new place, meeting new people, seeing new things. This is completely material. It has nothing, no spiritual essence in it. But we are attracted to holy place. Tad priti vasati stale. That is one of the symptoms of an ecstatic devotee. The stage of ecstasy, because when they put their foot in the holy place, like Akrura put, he rolled on the ground, because this is the same land in which Krishna performed his leela with his cows and calves and friends and everything. So if you don't see the Dham's connection with the Lord, then such pilgrimage is purposeless, he says. Come to the next chapter, 3.2.2. See, Prabhupada uses the word lucky families. See, in the chapter 1, what we discussed was about Vidura insulted by Duryodhana and Vidura quitting home and Vidura's pilgrimage. And then Vidura meeting Uddhava and then talking to Uddhava. And Vidura is remembering all the relatives of Krishna, devotees of Krishna, and making many inquiries. And another thing was Parikshit Maharaj asking about Oh, Vidura met Maitreya. And their discussions must have been very purposeful. So like that, those are the things we discussed till now. Now we are going to the second chapter, which is Remembrance of Lord Krishna. And this whole chapter, the hero is Uddhava. Because now he has already met Uddhava. Who? Vidura. Now Uddhava will speak in this chapter. And how Uddhava responds to Vidura's questions, you will see in this chapter. So in the very first loka, it says that when the great devotee Uddhava was asked by Vidura to speak on the message, Uddhava was unable to answer immediately due to excessive anxiety at the remembrance of the Lord. And then the second one, read the translation.
He was one who even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have it.
Amazing, no? How can somebody miss breakfast prasad, no? Like imagine you are, after the Guru Puja, you went to ecstasy. And everybody is calling, Prabhu, come for prasad. No, I want to chant some extra rounds. And I'll sit in temple hall. And you continue till Jairada Madhava is heard. Any day it happened to you like that? If it happens, it will be wonderful. We may miss anything except prasad. Correct, no? Anything else we can miss. We can miss chanting, we can miss Mangalarti, we can miss everything. But here he says he was ready to, I mean he was not interested, because he was decorating Krishna doll. He was decorating Krishna doll with dress, ornaments, peacock feather. So he was decorating. So Prabhupada says here, read the purport, second line. Okay, first line talks about Nitya Siddha. He was the natural devotee of Krishna. And from natural instinct, he used to serve Lord Krishna. And he used to play with dolls in the form of Krishna, dressing, feeding, worshipping. These are all signs of an eternally liberated soul who never forgets him. So all the religious injunctions are meant for awakening this dormant instinct of the living entity. The sooner this awakening is brought about, the quicker the mission of human life is fulfilled. In a good family of devotees, the child gets opportunity to serve the Lord in many ways. Either he says, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate. Shuchinam is Brahmana and Srimatam is Vaishya. In nice families, if one is born, a Brahmana child gets devotional sanskaras and a Vaishya child has no anxiety about bread and butter. Both of them have some advantage. And then the last 3-4 lines from bottom of the purport, it says, Maharaj Parikshit, you read it? Maharaj Parikshit also?
Maharaj Parikshit also used to play with Krishna dolls in his childhood. In India, the children in good families are still given dolls of the Lord like Rama and Krishna, or sometimes the demigods, so that they may develop the aptitude of service to the Lord. By the grace of Lord, we were given the same opportunity by our parents, and the beginning of our life was based on this principle.
So in this way, we are talking about Uddhava, we are talking about Parikshit, here we are talking about Prabhupada also. So elsewhere Prabhupada calls these families as lucky families. Lucky families means Shuchanam Srimatam Gehe. In this way, the opportunity for devotion service is awakened. But I have seen, when I was a small kid, in our home also many dolls used to be there. You know, in South India, the Krishna dolls are little fat Krishna, because Krishna is with the butter pot, you know. And so I used to ask my mother, what is this, why this doll is blue and this doll is green? Then she told, Rama is green and Krishna is blue. Then I said, see, Krishna is having flute. Why that fellow is not having flute? She said, no, you should identify Ram because he holds only a bow and arrow behind, isn't it? Whereas Krishna holds a flute. So I very clearly remember as small children, this kind of things were taught. So now recently, a year ago, I saw one shop in Pune where they also had Krishna Rama dolls, but only 3-4. After that, there were practically 50 to 100 cricket bats they had made, you know. So I asked him, why are you having few dolls and so many cricket bats? Then he said, sir, you know, there is no market for the dolls. There is market for cricket bats. So nowadays I am making cricket bats and selling. You are selling. Because the taste is also changing because of Kali Yuga, you see. So when, and also nowadays Rama Krishna dolls have become replaced by teddy bears. You know, Balu, you see, isn't it? Yeah. So, and nowadays, you know, children are playing with mobile games also. Different type of, you know, what do you call that? Video games. Video games, shooting, you know. Shooting, hunting, biting, you know, beating, biting, that kind of, you see. So, in this way, the here Prabhupada calls those families as lucky where the opportunity is provided. See, he is quoting that. Yoga brashto bijayate. In the middle of the purport, he quotes that. So, in this way, wherever one gets opportunity for devotional progress, that is actually a lucky family, truly lucky family, he says. So, the next verse is very important, third one. Sa katam sevaya tasya kale najarasam gataha prishto vartam pratibruyat bhartu pada vanusmaran.
Uddhava thus served the Lord continually from childhood, and in his old age that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him.
Yeah, correct. See, his body was physically old, but his spirit of service never got old. That was always, in fact, with the age increasing, the bodily age increasing, his spirit of service was increasing more and more. That is the point here. See, that word he is using, jarasamgataha, kalena jarasamgataha. It's a very beautiful purport. Read the purport.
Transcendental service to the Lord is not mundane. The service attitude of the devotee gradually increases and never becomes slackened. Generally,
see, this is one test for us. Sometimes devotees come and ask, Prabhuji, how do I know I am advancing in spiritual life? So we can check, is my service attitude increasing or gradually I am getting escaping mentality from the services. See, escaping from service means escaping from Krishna's grace. We can take it for granted, this statement. Escaping from seva means escaping from Krishna's grace. Yes?
Generally in old age, a person is allowed retirement from mundane service.
But companies give at what age? 58 or 60? Yeah, correct, huh? One has to get retired. Why they retire him? They know now he's not going to give good performance. You know? But Prabhupada started at 69 only. 9 years after retirement. And within 12 years, he established a worldwide movement with 108 temples, 5,000 initiated disciples in just 12 years. You can imagine. So, company people generally think that if a man is retired, he is like an old bull or oxen which has ploughed the field for many years, now it has become old and useless. You reject it. But actually you will find, although Prabhupada's body was old, he was younger than the youngest of the boys in the West. In fact, when he was running from one program to another in Allahabad, one of the disciples was telling that after 2-3 programs he was knocked down, his servant. And his servant would be sleeping when Prabhupada was eating. And when Prabhupada saw servant sleeping, Prabhupada finished his prasad and went to the next program. And servant had to get up and run and catch auto and run behind. So you will read it in Transcendental Diary, I was reading. So servant said, you know, how Prabhupada was having such energy, spiritual energy, was moving him. So it's definitely not material energy because his body was very old and invalid. His body was completely bony and everything. So he had such a love for Krishna. That love was pushing him. Here also Uddhava is saying like that. Read further.
Generally in old age, a person is allowed retirement from mundane service. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no retirement at all.
No retirement. How long we do devotional service? Eternally. Yes.
On the contrary, the service attitude increases more and more with the progress of age. In the transcendental service, there is no satiation.
You have seen Paramahansa Gopakrishna Maharaj, till 12 o'clock he is meeting all the people. Next day morning you will find him where?
Altar.
The altar. It's a practical proof, isn't it? And many of these people, like Visvanatha Bhaktachar Swami, and you find many of these people and all, they have had certain ailment in the body, and some of them have taken angioplasty or heart operation, But when it comes to service, we don't see them tired at all. You see? Very amazing. Yes?
And therefore, there is no retirement. Materially, when a man becomes tired by rendering service in his physical body, he is allowed retirement. But in the transcendental service, there is no feeling of fatigue because it is spiritual service and is not on the bodily plane. Service on the bodily plane dwindles as the body grows older, but the spirit is never old. And therefore, on the spiritual plane, the service is never tiresome.
Like we say, Adyam Purana Purusham Navayavanam. This is what Krishna we say. Similarly, the soul also, as soon as there is sun, there are rays of sun. Similarly, as soon as there was Krishna, Mamai Vamsha Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta, Sanatan Kalase. Jivas have been always there with Krishna. So because Krishna is young always, similarly the soul also is young. Soul never gets old also. So therefore the relationship between Krishna and the living entity matches very perfect. And to the degree we have awakened our soul, to that degree one does not feel tired. And to the degree we identify with the material body, to that degree our thirst, our hunger, our sleep, our want for sense gratification, all these things increase. For example, there are some, in the neophyte stage, a devotee feels, after doing little bit of devotion service, one wants some rest. Like I have seen people, after finishing chanting in one of the student centers, like that he collapsed in the hall only, temple hall only. Then I asked, what happened to the boy? He said, Prabhuji has completed his rounds, Prabhuji, he said. This is the symptom of completing rounds. isn't it? As if he has conquered a battle or something. Isn't it? So, you will find after every little devotion service, living entity wants some break, some rest. That is because of, so to the degree we identify with the body, that much we have thirst and hunger and need for sense gratification, need for rest, need for some breathing, correct, no? One wants a little break. All these things. To the degree one is awakened in the relationship between soul and Krishna, to that degree, Prabhupada once said, no, what he said? Prabhupada said, somebody asked, Swamiji, in your moment, do you have some entertainment also, recreation also? What Prabhupada said? What do you think we are doing now? Everything is recreation. He said, Mangalarti is recreation, Guru Puja is recreation, Bhagavatam class is recreation, eating prasad is recreation, distributing books is recreation. Everything is recreation. So Prabhupada, see, that's a saying in English, a proverb. If you love to do a work, you don't have to work for a day in your life, it is said, if you love a work. Similarly, a devotee of the Lord loves this devotion service. So he doesn't consider it as work. But other people who want sense gratification, they consider devotion service as some obligation or as some duty, especially in Vaidhi Bhakti stage, correct, no? In Vaidhi Bhakti, we are supposed to get up in the morning. We are supposed to complete 16 rounds. Prabhu, are we supposed to attend Bhagavatam class every day? Isn't it? So if somebody does, because they are supposed to, is it enthusiastic one? Therefore it becomes a burdensome, you know, you have to drag along in a burdensome way. So he is saying that, but when the devotional spirit increases, the spirit never is old. And read the next para, Uddhava.
Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. His service attitude matured on the transcendental plane, and therefore as soon as he was questioned by Vidura about Lord Krishna, he at once remembered his Lord by reference to the context and forgot himself on the physical plane. That is the sign of pure devotional service to the Lord, as will be explained later on in Lord Kapila's instruction to his mother Devahuti.
So, advanced devotees, they forget the physical plane and they become absorbed in the spiritual plane. That is the cause of their enthusiasm, he says like that. Therefore, sometimes, after they do a lot of service on the spiritual plane and they return to physical plane, they may find some wear and tear on the physical plane, which they don't mind also. The wear and tear will happen to the physical body. Prabhupada took enormous trouble. Doctor told him that, you know, this old man doesn't move out of one place. He is sitting and sitting and sitting. He's chanting. He's meditating too much, he said. And then he said he should walk every day. Then Prabhupada started walking 1 hour a day. In the morning he would walk and he would take oil massage in the afternoon. Because for those who are extensively traveling from one place to another, different water, different climatic conditions, different places, foods, one has to eat. So they get cough and cold, and if bodily immunity is less, they will get sick very easily. So Prabhupada took oil bath, so that because by taking oil bath, one can keep the body rejuvenated and fresh. So he paid a little attention to the body, because he had to complete his work, writing work. And he had to manage a worldwide organization. So he did that. Otherwise, you will find his enthusiasm was very outstanding. I read the fourth translation. Fourth one.
For a moment, he remained dead silent, and his body did not move. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy, and he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy.
Yeah. The purport, Prabhupada says, because the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his remembrance and his personal presence. He says, see, that is a theme we have written here. Prabhupada says that, well, somebody was telling Prabhupada, Swamiji, how nice it would have been if I got to hear Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna. And then Prabhupada said, why do you think you are not hearing directly from Krishna? You are right now hearing from Krishna when you read Bhagavad Gita in the spirit of Arjuna. If you adopt the devotional spirit of Arjuna, you know, one can feel the presence of Krishna very strongly when you hear his sound vibration, the form of Bhagavad Gita. Because on a spiritual platform, there is no passage of time. You conquer the time. So when Lord Krishna is speaking, today, right here, you can feel the personality of Krishna, his compassionate heart, and his eagerness to reclaim us. All these things can be experienced when one adopts the right attitude of Arjuna, Prabhupada said. So, remembering the Lord and the personal presence of the Lord is not different. You know that pastime of South Indian, what is his name? That Pratishthanapur Brahman, who cooked sweet rice and put his finger. And actually there was no sweet rice. There were no kalashas of water, holy waters. Everything was in the mind. But when he put his finger like that, finger got burnt. That means, you can see, the Manasa Puja was so intense that the actual sweet rice and touching the sweet rice happened. That's how the finger got burnt. Lord Vishnu was laughing in the Vaikuntha, seeing that. And Lakshmiji asked, my dear Lord, why didn't you share your joy with me? You are laughing alone, what is the matter? Then the Lord told this story. And he sent for Garuda to bring him immediately to Vaikuntha. So, that is not the only pastime. There are many pastimes like that. You see Narasimhananda Brahmachari. You know, road stopped, isn't it? So, and not only he was thinking like this in the mind, some of us may think that was it just an imagination? Or was he out of his devotion to Lord Chaitanya, he was feeling, we may say. But actually Lord Chaitanya there experienced flower bed. When Lord Chaitanya was walking, suddenly he found the road was so beautifully decorated. And Mahaprabhu being the absolute Lord, he could immediately understand who is doing it. That fellow is meditating in his mind to make a flower bed road for me. And therefore I am seeing flower bed on the road. So he meditated for flower bed, and Mahaprabhu experienced the flower bed directly also. So in this way, in the morning I was telling you also, you remember, that a spiritual platform is actually a platform of, it's a realm of consciousness. In consciousness realm, anything you desire, it happens instantly there. There is nothing impossible there. You desire a flower bed for the Lord to walk, immediately there is flower bed. Therefore he is saying the remembrance of the Lord and his personal presence is non-different on a spiritual plane. For example, you look at the deity form of Radha, Vrindavan, Chandra, Krishna. So the deity form of the Lord, it reciprocates with different people differently. Some new visitors may say, oh, these two dolls are so beautiful. These Radha and Krishna dolls, they may think like that. That's called Jada Buddhi. When one sees them with Jada Buddhi, then the reciprocation is minimal. It's very minimal. People maintain their material bodily consciousness. Then more advanced than that is Manomaya Buddhi. Manomaya is also mundane. That's also material. But after seeing the deity several times, even in the absence of the deity, one can think of the Lord in the mind. But the deity made of mind also is material. That is not spiritual. It's made up of material elements. Because mind is also a material element. Then one will come to the stage of Chinmaya Drishti. In Chinmaya Drishti, because the devotee sees the Lord as spiritual padarth, the Lord also speaks to the devotee. The Lord also hears the devotee. The Lord also comes in the dream of the devotee and gives instructions like he did for Madhavendra Puri. The Lord reciprocates with the devotee. And the Lord answers the questions of the devotee. Like the devotee may go and speak to the deity and he gets answers also. So that reciprocation is reserved only for those who see him spiritually. Archya Vishnu Shiladir Gurush Naramatir, that verse says, if you see him materially, you won't get the full benefit. You get only partial benefit. In whatever way you see him, accordingly he reciprocates. Jada Buddhi, Manomaya Buddhi or Chinmaya Buddhi, like that. So in this way, the Lord is, Lord's body may be made up of, Ashtadhatus. But the Lord can behave spiritually. Why he can behave spiritually? Prabhupada gives in Ishopanishad. Like the government can take a paper and print a newspaper. The government can take another paper and print a currency note. Correct, no? Similarly, the Lord can take a marble and put it on the ground and say, this is for the floor. And there can be another marble in which Lord says, you engrave my deity form. So although both of them are initially made by marble, the currency note is more valuable than the newspaper. Everybody knows that, isn't it? Similarly, the Lord, the deity form of the Lord is called as the spiritual form visible to material eyes. So it's a Chinmaya form. And the Chinmayata will be perceived to the degree we become more and more pure and saintly. You can see. And then you can feel his personal presence, he says. So in this way, Uddhava, as soon as he heard some question about Krishna and Vrindavan, he was posted on a spiritual plane and he forgot the external world. Therefore, he went into samadhi by hearing that. As it says. Yeah, go to 3.5 translation. Yeah.
It was so observed by Vidura that Uddhava had all the transcendental bodily changes due to total ecstasy. And he was trying to wipe away tears of separation from his eyes. Thus, Vidura could understand that Uddhava had completely assimilated extensive love for the Lord.
Yeah. See, in the fourth line, he's saying there are three different stages of development. First stage is Vaidhi Bhakti. The second stage is, assimilation and realization of the steady conditioned devotional service. And the last stage is ecstasy. So there is Vaidhi Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, we say. Sometimes Bhava and Prema are put together. Because Prema is like an ocean of love and Bhava is the waves in that ocean. So they are put together. So in this way, Prabhupada gives a clue there. By regular hearing of the glories and pastimes of the Lord, the impurities in the student's heart begin to be washed off. The more one is cleansed of impurities, the more one becomes fixed in devotional service. And gradually one goes higher and higher. So these two points are important for us. What is the Hridayantastho Hyabhadrani? Vidunati. That happens by what? Shinvatam? Swagata Krishna. That happens. And then when the abhadras are washed away, then what is the shloka? Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobha deyaschaye cheta eta ranaviddham sthitam sattve prasiddhi. That is nishtha. When rajoguna tamoguna are gone, then one comes to nishtha bhakti, then steady devotional service. Those two shlokas can be remembered here. So these are all for our practice. But Uddhava was far advanced, far more advanced. He was in ecstatic love. He was very pure. He has seen Krishna face to face and heard from him. Yeah. Now, this is a very important purport, sixth one. Read the second line. The great devotee Uddhava soon came back from the abode of the Lord to the human plane. And wiping his eyes, he awakened his reminiscence of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. See, from where did he come back, Uddhava? From Vaikuntha abode. She came back to the human plane regarding that Prabhupada's writing and purport. See the second line. Okay, the first line he says, read that when Uddhava was fully
absorbed. When Uddhava was fully absorbed in the transcendental ecstasy of the love of God, he actually forgot all about the external world. The pure devotee lives constantly in the abode of the Supreme Lord, even in the present body, which apparently belongs to this world.
That means Prabhupada says, our material body apparently belongs to this world. And when we become pure devotees, we will constantly live in Lord's abode. Although we may be moving in this world. Like that he says. Go ahead.
The pure devotee is not exactly on the bodily plane, since he is absorbed in the transcendental thought of the Supreme. When Uddhava wanted to speak to Vidura, he came down from the abode of the Lord, Dwaraka, to the material plane of human beings. Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service, and not for any material cause. A living entity can live either on the material plane or in the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition.
That's the main point. So, see, there are two planes, material plane, spiritual plane. So, we all have a material identity and a spiritual identity. Which identity stands out generally in this world? Material identity. People think, I'm an engineer, I belong to this caste, I belong to this state. This is the language that I speak. These are my bodily relationships. My mother, father, brother, sister, family. You know. And also my bodily color is black or fair. I am stout or thin. I am tall or short. And so this kind of identification we have. This is called bodily plane. We call it. And what is this? And then when you become devotees, we at least understand theoretically that I am not the body. I am the soul. You know. I belong to the spiritual world. So that remains a theory in a very neophyte stage. But a devotee who is practicing Krishna consciousness for on a regular basis, over a period of time, gradually he is supposed to realize that. What is the spiritual plane? Spiritual plane is a place where one sees that everywhere there are chintamani gems in the spiritual sky. There are desire trees, there are cows giving unlimited supply of milk, desire tree ready to provide any facility for serving the Lord. The Gopas are herding the cows and calves with Krishna and playing. The gopis are dancing with Krishna. Yashoda is making butter. So we have heard these pastimes, but to the degree a devotee has developed a deep-rooted faith in the spiritual information, the material world goes to the background and the spiritual world comes to the forefront. Therefore, such devotees like Uddhava, they are always posting their consciousness on the spiritual plane. Like we saw in the previous chapter, Vidura was talking everything in line with Krishna only. Krishna in Dwaraka, Krishna's relatives, Krishna's correct what pleases Krishna and all that he was talking. Now Uddhava is going to speak in the same way. Both are actually like intoxicated devotees. Vidura and Uddhava. So for us who have been in this material plane for a pretty long time, to uplift our consciousness, you see, it is like you see, there are so many scooters and cars going on the road, but they cannot fly. So to fly, you have to first go to the airport, and you have to board a plane. So the plane also runs first on the runway, then it takes off. So going to airport means coming to Sattvaguna. So the airport is like Sattvaguna. And then there when you go, you board the, you know, Bhagavatam plane, and then Bhagavatam, you know, when one renders devotional service, then one is taken to a higher and higher and higher plane. Then in that highest plane, which is being explained here, as soon as Uddhava heard a question about Krishna, he immediately posted himself in the spiritual plane. And from there, that means he thought of Dwaraka, he thought of Krishna, he thought of Pradyumna, he thought of the queens, he thought of Sudharma assembly, he thought of how Krishna deals with the Dwarakavasis. So, in our conditioned stage, our mind gets easily carried by thoughts of sense gratification and plans for sense gratification. This is something which you can easily understand. Just like our mind makes plans for sense gratification, like that the pure devotee's mind makes plans for remembering Krishna's activities. In the same way, almost in the same pace, you can say. Therefore, Prabhupada is saying like this, see. The pure devotee lives constantly in the abode of the Supreme Lord, he says. Even in the present body, which apparently belongs to this world. And also when a pure devotee dies, you know what happens? He doesn't even know when he left the current body, when he entered the spiritual world. Because it makes no difference to him. In this world itself, in consciousness, he is there only. Therefore, when he leaves the material body also, it doesn't make any difference to him. Like that he says. It's very deep purport. And Prabhupada later on talks about Bhakti Lata. And if you see the 10 or 15 lines from the bottom of the purport, Prabhupada talks about the creeper of devotion service. How it goes through the entire material world and enters spiritual sky, and you know, simply by hearing and chanting, he says. When the creeper is fixed, the fruit of the creeper comes into existence. And the gardener who nourished it is able to enjoy the fruit of love, and his life becomes successful. Yeah? Oh, this is Bhakti Lata. Yeah, see, when we meet a Vaishnava guru, you know, he gives the Bhakti Lata. What is Bhakti Lata Bij that is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? If you see, I'll just show you that verse. He says, these are the procedures and practices. He gives. See here what Prabhupada says. Bhakti Lata Bij means seed of devotional service. Please read it, everything.
Bhakti Lata Bij means the seed of devotional service. Everything has an original cause or seed. For any idea, program, plan or device, there is first of all the contemplation of the plan, and that is called the bija or seed. The methods, rules and regulations by which one is perfectly trained in devotional service constitute the Bhakti Lata Bij.
Ah, see, Prabhupada says here. The methods, what are the methods we follow? For example, the chanting of the holy name, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, correct, no? And 64 principles of devotional service. And also rules and regulations include the four relative principles, you know. So, all this, and also Navvidha Bhakti. And also activities like Navvidha Bhakti includes Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pasavam, all those things. So all these things together, they constitute Bhakti Lata Bij. He says like that. So that means we have to actively do those things. Then the seed gets watered. And that comes in next verse. He will say that Shravanadi Jal, he says. If you do hearing and chanting, then these activities become strengthened. See, if somebody is regularly, nicely hearing and chanting, he will want to do Mangalarati. All the 64 principles you will follow and everything. And then what happens? These grow, grow, grow means what? Our devotional activities increase and material activities reduce. Correct, no? Like we say, prema bhakti yaha hoite, avidya vinasha jate. And here Prabhupada makes one new point. He says, when this devotional creeper gets very nicely rooted, like mango tree, if you see, initially it's a plant. Anybody can pull it out. Correct, no? Whereas when the mango tree becomes a big stem, thick, nicely rooted, then only the mangoes come. Like that he says. That means after nishtha only one can experience fruits, like that he says. So this is a very nice section actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. So, oh, we have only 2-3 minutes. What is the next one? Yeah. 3-7. So the disappearance of Krishna is compared to the sun here. Very beautiful comparison, Prabhupada explains. See, if you see the second para of the purport, the comparison of Krishna to the sun is very appropriate. The darkness experienced by common man does not affect the sun itself, either at the time of sunrise or sunset. Because as soon as sun comes, what happens? The darkness is dissipated. So, similarly, Krishna's appearance and disappearance are like that of the sun. He appears and disappears in innumerable universes. Like from one universe he disappears, another universe he appears there. Like that. But for the universe where he is living and going, for them that universe is put to darkness. So lamentation is for them, not for Krishna. Like that Prabhupada is saying. Correct, no? He is always brilliant. When he is going from one universe to another, he is happy always. But we are put to darkness. It's loss for whom? So our loss is gain for another universe. Correct, no? Like that he is saying. And the second point he says, the Lord is always present in some universe, just as the sun is present in either the eastern or the western hemisphere, he says. That means, like either the sun is in the east, or it is in the west, or it's going, you know, going around. So in this way, sun is never absent. Maybe it is absent from our vision, but it's never dead. It's always alive. Third point, he says, below the next para, Lord Krishna's appearance in one universe and beginning of his different pastimes in another is taking place simultaneously. As soon as one pastime is finished here, it's manifested in another universe. And thus his Nitya Leela are going on without ending. Therefore, the sunset affects the common man, he says, not the sun itself. As he concludes. And then one very interesting point, last para you see in that purport. As at sunset, the snakes become powerful, thieves are encouraged, ghosts become active, the lotus becomes disfigured, and Chakravaki laments. So with the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the atheists feel enlivened and devotees become sorry. This is the reason for devotees' lamentation when Krishna disappears from our sight. Devotees don't lament that Krishna has died. Krishna can never die. He is like the sun. But devotees lament that when Krishna disappears from our universe becomes enveloped by the darkness of ignorance. And he is happy going to another universe. And then all these consequences happen. Yeah. So we have finished the six themes. Prabhupada ki.